This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the United Nations Refugee Agency says it is building up its life-saving operations for thousands of English-speaking Cameroonians who have fled to southeastern Nigeria to escape violence from the majority French-speaking community.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. Full details on the story coming up.
Also, the first group of refugees who had been approved by France to enter the country arrived this week from Central African Republic and Sudan, and scientists warn that a campaign to eradicate polio in Central Africa is falling short because of continuing threats by Boko Haram terrorists.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the first group of refugees who had been approved by France to enter the country arrived this week from Central African Republic and Sudan. This is part of France's new program to accept refugees who identify as such in Africa. The country hopes to accept at least 3,000 refugees through this program by 2019. Their arrival coincides with protests in Paris by migrants and NGOs who say immigration officials and police are being allowed to interview and even remove migrants from emergency housing centers. I spoke with reporter Catherine Field in Paris for the latest developments.
This is the first group of arrivals who came to France from camps in Chad and Niger. It was a group of 19 people from Sudan and the Central African Republic. Of that, 11 were children, and there were women who were considered by the French state to be vulnerable. They were in camps, they were on their own. Now, this is the first of what the French hope to be some 3,000 migrants whose papers have actually been processed by French authorities on the ground in these camps, either in Chad or Niger. They've arrived here, they have been given residence permits for 10 years. They've had their refugee status already checked before they came to France. So this is the start of what the French hope will be a process whereby these people will have their status checked abroad. And most importantly for the French, it will stop people traveling to Libya, traveling over the desert and falling into what the French government consider are gangs, people traffickers, who will do whatever they do. If by chance they're lucky, these people will then try and cross the Mediterranean, which is incredibly dangerous. So it's all part of a plan by the French to allow people to come to France, but recognize they have to do something on the ground, actually in Africa, and not wait for these people to come through the Mediterranean.
Also, Catherine, I understand there were protests this week by migrants and NGOs who were protesting the French government's allowing the immigration officials and police to interview and even remove some migrants from emergency housing centers.
Yes, indeed. This was a decree which was pushed through by the government very quietly late last week, which allowed for, as you say, for police and immigration authorities to go into these reception centers. Now, there have been protests ever since then, and there have been some very large ones here in Paris, mostly, you know, pushed ahead by the NGOs who say that these are supposed to be places where migrants who are waiting for their papers to be processed can live there. They're supposed to feel safe there. And their fear is that by changing the system and allowing police and immigration to go into these areas, then the migrants just won't go there. They will go and hide somewhere else. And they say that it's just not fair. Yes, they realize that the French government wants to tighten up on immigration. They really want to get on top of the situation of illegal migrants. The government says there's about 91,000 illegal migrants in the country at the moment. NGOs say there's no way the government could know that. In fact, it's probably closer to 300, if not 400,000. But this tightening up, they say, by sending police in is not the right way to do it. It's just going to cause resentment. And they've really appealed to the government to find some other method to process, to find out how many people are in the country at the moment and need to have their paperwork checked. There are something like 85,000 asylum applications in France each year, and only one out of three is accepted. But really, sending police into these so-called safe havens is not the way to go.
Also, I understand that about 27,000 migrants have been sent back to the country, and this is more than last year.
Indeed. Last year, of course, the French government was processing people here. They were sort of ignoring where they came from. Now the French government is getting quite tough and imposing a law, a European-wide law that says migrants, they have got to apply for asylum at whichever country they first arrive at in Europe. So this was a way of stopping people from shopping around to go to which country offers, if you like, the best deal. France has now said that it's going to go back and apply those rules. So you're seeing lots of these illegal migrants, asylum seekers, being sent back, particularly to Italy in some cases, to the Netherlands. Other places in Europe, the first country which these people first landed in when they came to Europe. Another sign that the French government is really trying to tighten up, not just on the rules, but also enforcing the rules that are there to make sure that immigrants do apply for asylum in the country where they first arrived.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris.
The United Nations Refugee Agency says it is building up its life-saving operations for thousands of English-speaking Cameroonians who have fled to southeastern Nigeria to escape violence from the majority French-speaking community. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The crisis, which has propelled thousands of English-speaking Cameroonians to seek refuge in neighboring Nigeria, is far from over. The UN Refugee Agency reports asylum seekers continue to arrive as unrest in Cameroon shows no signs of abating. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahecic says his agency and government teams have registered more than 7,200 arrivals in Nigeria's Cross River State since October 1st. That is when tensions escalated between security forces and pro-independence Anglophone demonstrators in largely French-speaking Cameroon. He tells VOA this is only a preliminary number, as thousands of other asylum seekers are yet to be registered and counted among the new arrivals.
Given the remoteness of the area, it is very difficult to access and to get a precise finger on the pulse in terms of what might be the daily arrivals at this stage. But certainly we are in the process of beefing up the presence there and, as I said, moving on with the government on the registration.
The UNHCR reports about 70% of the registered asylum seekers, a majority women and children, come from the area of Akwaya in southwest Cameroon. Mahecic says the resources of the local communities hosting the refugees are being stretched to the limit. He says the UNHCR and partners are scaling up relief operations to meet the needs of all affected people. But he says distributing food, basic relief items, and medical aid in this remote region is very difficult. He notes the operation currently is being hampered by heavy rains that are washing out the road network. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Just after wrapping his State of the Nation address today, Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa headed to South Africa. On his first official trip as president, Mnangagwa will meet with South African leaders and the business community. He meets with South Africa's President Jacob Zuma tomorrow at his Pretoria residence. He has invited Zimbabweans doing business in South Africa and businesses interested in investing in Zimbabwe to a meeting tomorrow afternoon. Zimbabwe has long had a strong relationship with South Africa. In addition, hundreds of thousands of Zimbabweans live in South Africa. Most are economic migrants seeking work in South Africa's stronger economy.
The United Nations says the Libyan political agreement of December 2015, which set up the Government of National Accord, is still in force until a new one is adopted. Ghassan Salami, the UN Special Representative to Libya, urged all sides to avoid worsening the situation. But the commander of the Libyan National Army, General Khalifa Haftar, who backs a rival administration in the east, insists that the mandate of the UN-backed government in Tripoli has expired. He has expressed interest in running to become president of Libya. Mufta Tayyar, the former Libyan ambassador to Mexico, talks with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi about the latest developments. He says the so-called Sakirat deal needs to be amended if it stays in place.
Theoretically, what he said is right as far as paperwork, but it's not finished, it's not complete. Sakirat accord or agreement expired December 17th, but there are other steps supposed to be taken by the conflicting faction in Libya to finish this. Without that, the Sakirat deal is not finished, and afterwards doesn't make any sense there.
But the talks in Tunisia didn't improve the situation. They are not leading to any agreement to amend the Sakirat agreement.
If they do not amend it, we are not going anywhere. The Sakirat at its time, it was a hope and still. And those who made it and frame it did their best. And when it was tested, we found out there are some vacuums, some elements need to be fulfilled. Without that, wherever we go, Tunisia or not Tunisia, we are not going to make it.
In a statement, Ghassan Salama, the UN Special Representative to Libya, urged all parties to refrain from any actions that could undermine the political process. Would that find a positive response?
Well, if they do not respond positively, what do they have? What these factions' alternatives? More fighting, more bloodshed. People are fed up with this, to be honest with you. The people are squeezed, and there are suffering in Libya, and they are calling upon the international community and the domestic factions to get along and save the Libyans from this mess.
But the temptation of power would urge General Haftar to continue. The U.S. repeatedly announced that there is no military solution in Libya.
The temptation for power is not only Haftar. There are other people who have the same thing. Everybody agree now on two things, and these two things have been delivered clear and sound to everybody, including Haftar, in his last visits to Italy, Egypt, and two things. Number one, there's no military solution for the conflict in Libya. Number two, there is no single power in Libya can have the upper hand in the struggle. They have to sit together to discuss, to reach, to compromise, and to move on.
That was Mohammed El-Shenawi talking to Mufta Tayyar, the former Libyan ambassador to Mexico.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The first group of refugees who have been approved by France to enter the country arrived this week from Central Africa Republic and Sudan. And after wrapping his State of the Nation address today, Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa headed to South Africa on his first official trip as president. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The UN Children's Fund warns children in Yemen risk death as access to clean water runs out due to import restrictions of fuel into the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Saudi Arabia's blockade of humanitarian and commercial goods into Yemen is causing a crisis on many levels. The UN Children's Fund says the blockade is creating a severe fuel shortage, causing steep price hikes and deepening the country's already serious water and health crisis. UNICEF reports the cost of diesel fuel has doubled during the past month, jeopardizing the provision of water, especially for the poorest families. It says water pumping stations serving more than 3 million people in 14 cities are quickly running out of fuel. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillard says Prices of commercially trucked water, a main source of one-fifth of the population, have skyrocketed.
For over two-thirds of Yemenis living in extreme poverty, safe water is now completely unaffordable. Almost 400,000 children suffer from severe acute malnutrition in Yemen, and they are fighting for their lives. And the poor access to safe drinking water is also one of the most important causes of malnutrition.
UNICEF warns the lack of safe water and other vital services are having a serious impact on health care and sanitation for children. It says thousands of children are in a particularly weakened condition and are vulnerable to outbreaks of diseases, including acute watery diarrhea and cholera. It notes life-saving vaccines worth millions of dollars are at risk of being damaged because they cannot be properly stored without fuel. UNICEF is urgently calling for an end to the blockade. It warns the crisis afflicting the Yemeni population and children in particular will spiral out of control unless fuel and other life-saving humanitarian aid can freely enter the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United Nations Human Rights Office reports that Saudi-led coalition airstrikes have killed at least 136 Yemeni civilians and injured 86 over the past 2 weeks. Once again, Lisa Schlein has the details.
The surge in civilian casualties follows the killing of former Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh in the capital of Sana'a early this month. Saleh was killed by Iranian-backed Houthi rebels angry at his peace overtures to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia's counterattack has been relentless. UN human rights spokesman Rupert Colville says in the period from December 6th to 16th, the Saudi-led coalition has carried out numerous airstrikes against Houthi targets. These include a TV channel, a hospital, and a prison compound packed with detainees. In one incident, he says a woman with her 9 children returning home from a wedding party were killed in a coalition airstrike.
We urge all parties to the conflict to respect their obligations under international humanitarian law, including their obligation to respect the principles of distinction, proportionality, and precaution. They should take all feasible precautions to avoid, and in any event to minimize, the impact of violence on civilians.
Colville says there have been so many incidents of this kind involving civilians in Yemen, it would be hard to conclude that war crimes have not taken place. He says his office also is concerned about reported violations by Houthis against members of former President Saleh's political party, the General People's Congress, including attacks and arbitrary detentions. Houthi rebels on Tuesday reportedly fired a ballistic missile near the Saudi capital, Riyadh, which was intercepted by the Saudi-led coalition. No casualties have been reported. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The U.S. Senate voted late yesterday to overhaul America's tax system, putting President Donald Trump and congressional Republicans one perfunctory vote away from scoring a major legislative victory and fulfilling a campaign promise. All 51 Senate Republicans present voted in favor of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, while all 48 Democrats opposed it. The bill permanently slashes corporate taxes, temporarily cuts taxes paid by American wage and salary earners, caps popular tax deductions, and hikes the U.S. national debt by at least $1 trillion over a decade. The Republican-led House of Representatives approved the bill earlier in the day on a party-line vote. It must go back to the House later today for one final vote to correct several technical matters before it can be sent to the White House for Trump's signature. Republicans argue tax cuts will rev up the U.S. economy and make American businesses more competitive at home and abroad. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif told state media today that Iran will follow up the baseless accusations made by the U.S., which accused rebels in Yemen of using weapons provided by Iran to attack Saudi Arabia. The state-run Islamic Republic news agency quoted Zarif as saying the U.S. moves are provocative and that the U.S. is trying to hide their support for the bombardment of the innocent Yemenis through such accusations. Iran supports Houthis rebels who seized control of Yemen's capital in late 2014, but denies that it has supplied them with arms. The United States supports a coalition led by Saudi Arabia that has been battling the Houthis for nearly 3 years in support of Yemen's internationally recognized president, Abdul Rabu Mansour Hadi. In New York yesterday, the UN Security Council heard its semi-annual briefing on the implementation of the resolution endorsing the 2015 deal to prevent Iran building a nuclear bomb. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley used the session to raise the issue of alleged Iranian arms transfers to Yemen, which, if verified, would violate both an international arms embargo against the Houthis and one against Iran.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.